ferocious non-disclosure agreements for bookshops, owners to sign in advance of today's publication date. Man Booker Prize judges reading the book under close supervision at the publishing house. The book itself released at midnight last night. And tonight, a public interview with the author in London's National Theatre will be streamed live in 1,000 cinemas worldwide, including a few around Ireland. Not since J.K. Rowling published her last Harry Potter book have we seen such excitement around the launch of a novel. I'm speaking, of course, about Margaret Atwood's new novel, The Testaments, her sequel, to The Handmaid's Tale. Sinead Gleeson and Jerry Stembridge have been reading The Testaments, and they're with me in studio now. It really was like a Harry Potter event. I mean, I heard something on Morning Ireland this morning, Sinead, and it was people counting down to midnight for the book to appear on the shelves.
There was footage. Her publisher were posting a lot of clips on Twitter last night. The queue was round the block in London, like significantly round the block.
How many people dressed in Handmaid's Tale costumes? They had a procession
of handmaids and pearl girls, which we'll talk about in a little while when we talk about this book. It's kind of like Ghost at a Watchman, the Harper Lee book a couple of years ago. There was all the kind of same sort of hype around it, and Harry Potter. I mean, it is an absolute sensation. And then you're sort of, I'm sure there's other writers who envy a writer like that getting all that attention, but that fills me with absolute horror and dread, that level of hype, anticipation and pressure on you with a book like this, because there's an awful lot of talk around it, but it's been a spectacle, absolutely.
And we were able to sit back and have it delivered to us. I was half expecting a couple of ants to turn up at the door, actually, and in the middle of the night and bring it to me.
It was just a normal courier.
Yes. But it was lovely, and it's a lovely thing to bring home as well, I have to say. You won't be getting this book back from me at the end. It's beautifully produced.
It's gorgeous, the design is amazing.
Yeah, because the design on the front, it has that Handmaid's Tale, if people who may know the television series, it has that kind of costume, but it's a kind of a luminous green and a white that we see on the front of this black cover. And I guess the part of the reason, at least, Jerry, for this excitement is not just the previous novel, but it's the television series. Television series is really responsible for the hype around the book, I would guess, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is. I mean, you could, if Margaret Atwood had written a sequel 10 years ago, it would have been of the normal interest it would have had, but it was nothing whatsoever like this. It also, though, points to the significance and success of the TV. I mean, even it's not just any TV series, the significance and success in the particular moment in our politics and all the rest of it that it has established for itself has made this very, very special. So actually, you're talking about the hype, and even the desire on people's part to see Margaret Atwood produce a sequel must have put enormous pressure on her as to how to go about this book and what exactly she should do and how it should relate to the TV series. I think it's really interesting what she's done. I don't know
if you saw the interview that she gave with the Sunday Times over the weekend, and I don't think
I saw the Tim Walker photographs.
I don't think there'd be too much pressure felt by Margaret
Atwood.
She certainly would just bat it off into play. I would have thought so. I will write what I want to write when I'm ready to write it.
Yeah, and I think what she said was that she wrote the book because people asked her a lot of questions about the book in the intervening 34
about The Handmaid's Tale.
About The Handmaid's Tale, and that she wanted to give people the answers to Gilead and the story, and that's one of the motivators, I think, for her setting it in this gargantuan task.
Well, let's lay out the novel The Handmaid's Tale in 1985, wasn't it, that it was published? What did the novel... Now, forget about the television series for the time being, because the novel is what we're interested in here. This is a sequel to the novel. It's not particularly related to the television series, and that's important. So what did the Handmaid's Tale give us back in 1985?
Well, the first series of the TV show is very, very faithful to it. And then the sort of, as showrunners tend to do now, is that they take the original source material and run with it. So it is about a sort of dystopian... enclosed world called Gilead, where women have been forced, fertility is dropped because of a series of economic and environmental disasters, so not everybody can have children. Women who are prized but kind of extraordinarily treated the opposite of that. They're treated as chattel. They're basically incubators for exceptionally wealthy families, commanders on their wives. They can't own money, they're not encouraged to read them. They were basically repurposed into this sort of horrifying claustrophobic world. And it tells the story very singularly of one handmaid in particular called Offred, about her tribulations and trials and trying to figure out why she's in this world, what's going to happen, will she have babies, will she be alive. There's a lot of brutality. It's quite a militaristic regime. There's a lot of violence. People get disappeared and killed. They get strung up on famously on the wall. And I think part of the novel was written originally by Atwood in Berlin in 84. And I think part of that, what was going on or about to happen in 1989, seeped into the story. So it is a very brutal, claustrophobic, singular tale of one woman's story.
Who has a child of her own. Her husband.
Who's forcibly put into this Gilead place. And so is separated from her family, from the life she had, the career she had, basically everything. Her former life exists no more, as it does for any other woman in there, who is, even if she's an aunt, a handmaid or a commander's wife. So everything has changed in women's lives, and that's why I think people have also embraced TV series and book, and that it's looking at the rowbacks in terms of Roe versus Wade in the US, the repeal movement in Ireland, and people are seeing a lot of political parallels between the book and the end of
Handmaid's Tale. Offred has been brought off, and we don't know whether she's been brought off.
She's in a van, and it's to freedom. Yeah, you don't know. It's very ambiguous. I never felt it was particularly a positive ending. I didn't know if it was going to be for freedom, but I think Atwood left it open to the reader, which is why I think when people started to hear there was a sequel to this, they made an assumption that this would be Offred's story.
But the story we get here is very different. Offred is there in some ways. Let's not go in too much into that, but there are three women who are speaking directly to us. Because Handmaid's Tale, the original, was a testament as well. Basically, it was Offred's testament.
A single person narrative. Yeah. This is what I liked about this book straight away, because knowing somewhat what was going on with the TV series as it continued, where the Offred character was still central to it, I thought it was a great decision on Margaret Atwood's part to take us away from that. In fact, there isn't a handmaid in sight, really, in the entire novel. And so instead, we now have a broken narrative. We have three separate first-person narratives. The one I think that it seems to me Atwood most enjoyed writing, I have to say, and I suspect most people will enjoy reading, is Aunt Lydia. Hmm. And again, knowing what a dare I say, popular character she was in the...
Nasty popular in
the first season, then I suspect readers will greatly enjoy that. The other two characters are entirely new, and they're much younger characters, and they're called by, you know, they have various names.
Yeah.
They have various names. First and foremost, they're known simply as the witnesses, 369A and 369B. And they get separate chapters. We go back and forth, but you can tell from an early stage that their stories may well become interconnected in some way, and in some way that may well connect with the original novel. But enough of that for now. That it'll become apparent soon, but that's part of the pleasure and the mystery of the book. They're also known as Daisy
and
Agnes.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
other names crop up as well as the names are changed.
It is important though that one of the young girls is in Gilead. Another one is
Canada. That's very important as well. And in fact, there was I'm curious what you thought about that, Sinead. I felt, you know, I loved the writing of Lydia. I thought Atwood was very comfortable with the writing of Agnes, who is the other Gilead character. I was less certain about her writing of this Canadian teenager, Canadian female teenager. And I felt she was possibly a little scared of it because it might go into a kind of parodic young person going like all the time.
Yeah.
And so she avoided all that. But do you think it was successful in the end?
Yeah, I mean, there's an age gap between... They're both young women. There's an age gap between them. And yet at times it doesn't feel that their voices are that distinct at times.
Yeah.
Aunt Lady, I mean, Atwood is a masterful writer. She is brilliant at character. She writes utterly unbelievable, very talky people who you believe would just jump off the page and stand up beside you. She's brilliant at setting tone and tone of voice, all the things that are just seem really effortless but are not when you read them as a reader or a writer. She does very well. I personally was really disappointed that Alfred wasn't the focus of the story. I wanted to know what happened.
You were coming with that expectation?
Yeah, and that's just purely my own expectation.
And we are
15, 16 years on. And also, I'm very mindful of the John Updike rule for reviewing, you know, review the book that you got, not the book that you wanted it
here,
to
here.
Be. But also I did really enjoy this book, because I think it's very, very plotty. It reads like a thriller. She does all these intersecting threads. The thriller storyline within it, before we talk more about the characters maybe, is that there is a mole, a high profile mole in Gilead, who's leaking information outside and getting it outside of Gilead to the resistance in Canada, which is how this character, the girl from outside, the girl you're talking about, Daisy, ends up being in Gilead. She's been smuggled in.
So there's a mole in Gilead.
Yeah.
Getting material out to the resistance in Canada.
Yeah.
But there's a reverse movement as well, isn't there?
Yeah, there's also what they started to do, because they still need to recruit women, because lots of women are managing to escape from Gilead, is that these new girls called the Pearl Girls, who go out into the world, they wear silver clothes and pearls. Some of them were at the launch in London last night, this is how they find Daisy. I mean, there's a double cross almost.
They think
they found her, where she's kind of trying to trick them into getting her into Gilead, but they know exactly who she is, because they pick this girl for a very specific reason, which becomes clear later on. Mm. So there's three spinning plates of three kind of female narratives. Aunt Lydia, I wish the whole book was Aunt Lydia, to be honest. It's so well done. It's incredibly humorous. It's the way she kind of deals with all her subordinates and plays all the women who are just below her and in terror of her, off each other, is very, very comic.
Well, just let me tease something out, though, a little bit further, which is this idea of the mole in Gilead sending material out and information out to Canada, and then the pearls who are part of kind of buoying Gilead up and causing all sorts of
trying
atrocities.
Trying to find new girls for Gilead, basically.
So the spy thriller element is who's double-crossing whom and who's going to win that battle.
And I think that in any kind of thriller, the reader wants to know that. In this case, I think you figure out quite quickly who it is. It's revealed to you quite quickly. Mm. And it does feel like a slightly forced... a forced way of doing it to me. So I spotted it quite early on. Mm. Also, really strangely, because Gilead was so brilliantly put together architecturally as a place in the first book, it felt very much like a backdrop in this book. I didn't get a sense of the same fear or terror or panic.
What kind of place is Gilead to live in now? But isn't that because it's important to say, again, a simple thing for the reader, that this takes place approximately, I would have thought, 16 years. Approximately 16 years after The Handmaid's Tale. Mm. So the place is well established, but is also Gilead is well established now as a place, but it's also under threat and is also corrupted. And I think part of the reason for your instinct, which I think is the case, is because there was a really dread sense of present tense in The Handmaid's Tale, because it's happening as it's happening.
Yeah. Well, you were constantly worried for Alfred.
Yes, exactly.
What was going to happen to her?
Whereas here, it's established immediately, so we're not giving anything away. These are three testimonies. So you sort of know that at least two of the three people have got out alive and are able to give those testimonies. So that does create that feeling of distance from it. But I agree with you completely about Aunt Lydia. And like, it's so clear in it that Atwood was enjoying writing her more than anything else and had it absolutely perfectly. And from the opening two pages of it, you learn just so many little details about where she's likely to take this character, and she's going to take this character in very surprising ways. Mm. But again, I'm not giving anything away, because it's very clear from the start that the character will be taken in surprising ways.
I don't know, Jerry, if you watched the TV show, but the other really interesting thing in this book is that Aunt Lydia gets a whole backstory that's completely different to the TV show.
Yeah, which is very interesting.
It's really
interesting. They kind of motivate the television series.
Is it different or non-existent?
Yeah, no, in the TV show it's different.
Right.
She's a teacher.
But not from the novel.
She's a teacher in the TV show. In this, the backstory she gives her here is that she was a judge that worked with a lot of other women, specifically on cases that involve women's lives, so rights for sex workers, abortion cases.
But am I right in remembering she didn't have any backstory in the novel?
I don't remember.
The backstory that you're talking about in the television series came in seasons 2 and 3, which
we
is
didn't
not
get
right.
exactly.
to do
with it's
Margaret.
Not, it's not in the first
exactly.
novel. It's not in Handmaid's Tale.
And I think Atwood was at pains not to be influenced by the second and third series, I would have said.
Apart from that she uses baby Nicole's name, which appears a lot in this book, which who doesn't appear until season 2 of the actual TV show.
Right.
So that's something, there's something quite meta about her doing that. She's aware. She also told the showrunners who made the show, do not kill Aunt Lydia, because she was obviously writing this book. But I think that, there's a sense that the those three characters, Jade is the one who, again, they get different names.
Names keep switching around.
They keep switching
around. And I guess
around.
That's part of the double crossing aspect, the spy thriller aspect of the read, which is to keep you on your toes as to who's really a Pearl Girl, who is a member of the Resistance, and who's playing who.
But I suppose maybe this is why we both liked Aunt Lydia's narrative better, because there's a lot of backstory and there's a lot more depth to it, because she talks as well about, she makes a decision very early on that they say to her, you know, you can be one of them or you can be one of us, you can hurl the stones or you can be the, you know, or you can be hurled at. And she decides really early on, I'm all about myself. I'm gonna side with them. But she's also gathering information in the story. So she has become disillusioned with Gilead. She's gathering information and dirt on commanders, which she hopes and she knows that maybe it'll save her neck someday, or maybe it won't be enough to.
Now, The Handmaid's Tale, the 1985 novel, you know, has really become a great source of study for in feminist studies in particular, and has been used when the television series came out as saying, oh, look, isn't this society the society that we're living in today? You only have to think of the, you know, the Boko Haram kidnappings of the young girls. In fact, the subject of Edna O'Brien's new book, Girl. So 1985, kind of, when we saw the television series, said, wow, she really was on the nail. She hit the nail on the head back in 1985. What about now? Has she, in this, the testaments, has she, is she making comments on contemporary society in a more direct way?
Well, okay, I have a feeling about this, and it is, you know, entirely out of my own head. I mean, there are some things in the book that suggested to me, but it's not, I haven't heard Margaret Atwood say this or whatever. I have a feeling that Margaret Atwood still feels that she did what she needed to do with The Handmaid's Tale. That is the book. That is the book that meant whatever it is she wanted to say about the world and the position of women in the world and all the rest of it. This, you know, she continues the idea, but essentially she is answering a call to finish off the story. And there's a sense in which she tells an entertaining yarn and brings it to
the story.
She does finish the story, but that this book, I would suspect, does not mean anything to her like The Handmaid's
Tale. Yeah, so what you're saying, Gerry,
I think she's telling a good yarn.
I'm
entertaining.
Yeah, I'm not putting words in your mouth here, but saying that the political aspect that was there in The Handmaid's Tale, you're saying, is not as present then?
No, it's present. It's all there, but for a different purpose. The purpose in this book becomes a really, you know, entertaining thriller with a story that brings us to an end. And in fact, here's probably what gave it to me, is that there is a moment, there is an offered moment in it. And for me, it was sort of perfunctory. It appeared like, this is something I'm going to have to do for the readers. This is something that is going to make
it. I have to tie up that little loose end.
Yeah, because this is why I've written the book in the first place. But I genuinely think...
You're kind of grimacing slightly, Sinead.
No, yeah. I remember, I'm pretty sure somebody said to me that, bizarrely, in the first novel, Offred uses the term false news, and in this book we get fake news, which is, you know, we all know what that means, and he's famous for saying it. There's not so much of the environmental concern, which was obviously the reason for everything happening in Gilead erupting in the first place. And obviously we know that in lots of Atwood's other work, including her last trilogy, she's very much all about the environmental stuff. So the world feels outside an awful lot, even though it's part of the book is set in Canada. And again, I just felt that Gilead didn't feel like the same place at all, even though we don't get the end of Gilead. We don't finally get the straw that breaks the camel's back, even though we get the testimony at the end that's found by scholars like the first book, and we don't find out how it all erupted and how everyone, did they go to jail,
so
were they
still,
all sentenced,
but
we don't find out.
The same feeling of terror,
it's not as terrifying a book, it's not as claustrophobic,
but
it's a very entertaining book.
Yeah, because in some ways, if you think of the television series now, just to make that comparison, season one was The Handmaid's Tale. Seasons two and three went off in other directions. People talked about torture,
they
porn,
were very grim,
and the grimness of it all. She seems to have avoided that aspect.
And as I say, through the medium of Aunt Lydia and her sort of the small crew of aunts who dance around her, she creates something quite comic, because it's her, she addresses the reader all the time, and a lot of the asides are very comic. At one point somebody says something, she says, penises, them again, and there's loads of lines like that where she's kind of referencing and also back referencing things that we'll pick up from the first
book. I'm wondering now, from what you're both saying, we've had The Handmaid's Tale, we've often heard of prequels and we've often heard of sequels, is there an interquel to happen here, well, there, to fill the 15 years in
there
between?
Could be, because we could hear from Offred, and as I say, I would have liked more of Offred's story, and I think a lot of people are going to pick up this book, right, thinking it's going to end, it's going to be when Offred gets out of the van on page one, but it isn't that at all. That's not to say that it's not a lesser story, because it is very entertaining. It's just it's not the first book.
Yeah, and there is, the television rights of this have already been bought, I believe. So.
Have they already?
Of course they
let
have.
Let them work out how they're going to do that.
Absolutely. I feel that if she was happy to let 35 years go by before producing this book, there's probably a reason for that. Probably a reason, okay, that, you know.
But you're both saying read it ultimately.
Oh, absolutely.
It's very interesting.
In fact, you don't even have to have read The Handmaid's Tale. I think
it would, no, it stands alone.
I think you just pick that up and read it and enjoy it for itself.
Okay, that's Jerry Sandbridge and Sinead Gleeson speaking to us about Testaments by Margaret Atwood. There'll be lots more discussion about that over the coming days, I'm sure.